This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And before I introduce my first guest, well, my only guest today, but I want to just say thank you to all of you who are doing NaNoWriMo, and I just keep those emails coming in. And Ellie, I want to congratulate you. Ellie wrote to me that the other day she was so involved in her story that she wrote 3,000 words in a day. And so I am so proud of you, Ellie, and I look forward to reading your book when you finish it. Anyway, good luck to all of you NaNoWriMo people. You're halfway through, and you've got 14 days left, and keep going. And now I want to turn to a writer who, well, he wrote a book because he did something absolutely fantastic. He is a pilot, and it is just, you know, for me, well, you know, all of you know that my husband was also a pilot and that we did a lot of flying. And I want to welcome Captain Bob Young to Joy on Paper. He wrote a book called Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal. Hi, Captain Bob. Are you there? Okay.
Maybe I'm just on hold.
No, you're not on hold, Bob. I'm here. This is Patsy.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're here. Oh, this is so exciting for me to talk to a pilot. I love pilots. You guys are always so special.
I'm having a little technical. There we go.
Okay, can you hear me now? Bob, are you there? Whoa.
Hello.
I'm here, Bob. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'm sorry. I'll just wait for you.
Okay. Well, I'm here, and this is Patsy, and I am so happy that we can talk about your exciting book, Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal. How are you doing, Captain Bob? Wow. I don't know what's happening with him. He's not... Okay, this is not good. I'm excited to talk to him because it's a pilot, and as all of my listeners know, I am just always so thrilled to talk to pilots. I spent a great deal of time flying with my husband, who was a pilot, when we lived in England. And I will try his backup number that I have there, and we'll see if we can get him in. And if not, I'm going to be talking for an hour, which I hope not, because I had a second guest planned today, but unfortunately, she couldn't make it. So we'll see if Captain Bob is going to be on, because, as I said, when it comes to flying, I always give priority to pilots. That's my rule, because a pilot is a very special person. Eugenia Lovett West, who has been a guest on Joy on Paper, and she celebrated her 99th birthday with me and with all of us here in February. And her husband was a pilot in World War II, and I had so much fun talking to her about her husband and about his exploits in World War II and flying over Germany and his bombing runs. So whenever I have
some... Hello.
Oh, okay. Bob, are you there? Bob?
Patsy?
Yes, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Okay. I can hardly hear you.
I don't know. Everything should be good on our side. We're okay. Are you on a...
Okay. How do you hear me now?
Now I hear you, Bob.
Okay. Well, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Oh, it's so, it's so good that you're on, because I was telling my listeners and reminding them that my husband was a pilot. So I have a special affection for pilots. You guys are special, and it's wonderful. Your book, Vagabond Pilot, is fascinating, and it's really exciting to have you on the program. So tell us about how this all started.
Oh, my. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Patsy, for having me, and a good morning to you and all your listeners. Just getting the day started here in Southern California. So I've only had one cup of coffee, so I just want to warn everybody. I'm not, the cobwebs are still there. How did it all start? Life is what happens when you're busy making plans, I guess. And it started a long, long time ago when I was a wee little fellow in growing up on Long Island in Rockville Center, New York. Kind of thing shaped me and led to all the way to a significant reversal in my life and my dreams, and I had to regroup.
Well, there was an awful lot of flying going on around Long Island.
Oh yes. When I grew up, I was such a aviation aficionado, and I watched all the airliners fly into Idlewild Airport at that time, before it was Kennedy Airport, and I just had this affection for it, cemented by a lot of trips we used to make to the grandparents in Florida every Easter and Christmas school vacations. My father's parents retired very early and moved to booming Florida. And so it was always a treat as a little toddler to run through these planes and get into the cockpit. And then my dad, I remember specifically as a little toddler, was on the beach, would fly with me. So I was hooked.
Well, that's what happens with pilots. You get started, and of course, the plane that you flew is a Grumman, right?
Yes, a Grumman American Yankee. It's a two-seater. Originally, it came with a 108 horsepower engine. I souped mine up to 160, which basically means nothing, except it can power this plane a little better and carry a little more weight. It goes about 130 knots in still air, true airspeed.
Well, it's appropriate that you would fly a Grumman. Grumman is just great. Now, my husband, as I mentioned, he was a pilot, but he was also an aeronautical engineer. And he had the opportunity when he first visited America. One of the things that he wanted to do was to meet Mr. Grumman. So, because Mr. Grumman, of course, was an aeronautical engineer, so he managed to meet him. It was just for him. It was a thrill, of course.
That was on Long Island, yes.
Yes, it was on Long Island, yes.
That's where Grumman was when they built the lunar excursion module there.
Exactly.
In the Apollo program, yeah.
So when did you start flying, and then how did we get into this project here?
I started learning to fly when I first moved out to California I moved out in 73. I started to learn to fly in 1979, got my license on leap year day, 1980.
And so that's 1980, and so let's flash forward to when you started this project. When did you start the voyage across America?
Well, that's a good point. Maybe we should set a little background and tell everybody. I was living the good life, La Dolce Vita, as the book says. And my parents died and my brother died. And all the family business fell upon my shoulders, and I discovered some unfortunate things about my brother. And his conduct caught up with the rest of the family, and especially me, since I had started working with him in New York to help him out. And unbeknownst to me, a lot of the bad stuff came and bit me where I basically lost everything as a result. From the house on the hill with the lap pool and the wolf stove, you know, it was a real comeuppance because, candidly, I had lived a very charmed and blessed life. My father was a very, very successful real estate lawyer in New York, one of the biggest real estate lawyers for many years. Represented every major builder and developer, including our former president and his father and the Helmsleys and you name it, Lefrak, City, everything. Because his partner was the city planning commissioner, so they were heavily ingrained in New York politics. And my dad provided very well for us children, four children. And then when all of this happened, you know, when life hits you, it's like, oh my goodness. It was very painful. It was, now what do I do? I'm now, when this all happened, I just turned 71. I was still actively engaged in practicing in my law practice out here. And I honestly fell apart. I just did not know what to do. And that's how the genesis of this trip started to take shape.
And it was a big decision to make, to fly across the country and to undertake this. I mean, did you plan that you were going to do this long trip, or did you just start in spurts, or what was the overall plan?
Well, the plan was I needed to go. I have many wonderful friends across the country, and because of my plight at the time, my dear friends Bruce and Dolly, who lived out in Camarillo, said, "You stay with us for as long as you want." And they were returning a favor that I did for them when they first moved out to California. So I cashed in my chips, as I said. And but, you know, after a while, when you stay with people, the fish starts to stink, right? And I realized I needed to go, and I didn't know where to go. I had no clue, and I didn't want to be homeless and in my car, but that's pretty much what I was facing. So I realized there's one thing I could do, and that's I'll get in my plane and I'll fly. And I had always dreamed about flying my plane across the country. I had driven it a couple of times, and I thought, well, let's see where the universe is going to take me. And so I started planning a trip. And I thought originally just to go cross-country and that would be it. But then the challenge of making it round-trip and how the trip changed me motivated me to make it a round-trip back to Los Angeles.
And at that point, did you also plan the book? I mean, you planned that you're going to write a book about it, or you just...
Good question. No, it was, we all have our travails. We are frail creatures, and I was always a decent writer. I had been a lawyer, and I mainly did entertainment and business litigation, so I wrote a lot. And I was a voracious reader, and I decided, well, okay, maybe this will be good therapy and see what I could do and maybe put a book out of this. I'm going to write a book. And so I decided as I would go, I would write each chapter. And that's how I pretty much did it.
Well, I think that was a great idea because you are a fine writer. You have a natural writing talent. Well, lawyers do so much writing, and they are always good at organizing and planning, but you have a natural talent. You really capture the events and the people that you visit along the way, but it was a brave thing to do at your age to do that. And you know, so many people have gone through, well, they've just gone through hell these past few years with losing people, with losing, and you know, even today it may be worse today. So many people are going broke, you know.
It's not easy.
No, it's not easy.
And thank you for the kind words. That was very sweet. Thank you.
Well, you know, you have this great ability to write, and I'm glad that you put it. I'm glad that you thought of it right, you know, from the beginning, because it's always more difficult to write after. It's good to always keep notes.
Well, you know, it's very interesting you say that, because when we got into the editing process, it was enormous how many times we went through what I wrote, and I couldn't have imagined doing it afterwards, because and one of the things that I think I managed to capture was all the material and what people said and who I met. Everything was very fresh when I wrote it contemporaneously versus afterwards, but I was very proud, honestly, when I started going through the editing and said, holy smoke, you did this, wow.
Well, you did a good job, because I always advise people will say, well, I want to, you know, I start my program, I say, this is a program for people who, you know, for writers and for those who are dreaming of writing. I always tell people, maybe you're not going to write today, you know, you're 30 years old, you're not going to write your book now, but keep a journal, keep notes, because it's so important when you go to write it down, just to have those notes, to have exactly the references that you have. And of course, you were able to capture dialogue, and it's really, you've done a wonderful job. So on the day that you started off for this journey, this big vagabond journey of yours, you must have been a little bit frightened about what you were planning to do.
I was. I didn't know where I was going. I mean, I had destinations. I had a route. I had arranged to see people, but I didn't know what was next. I was very apprehensive. My friend said I was crazy. What are you doing? Where are you going? You need to find a job. You need to work. You need to do. You need to this. And I just felt the universe calling me for something new and something different. And if anything I could share now in retrospect is that the universe does provide, no matter how bleak things look. And I guess this is from life's perspective, that I've been fortunate to live enough years, but you gain perspective and you see how the dots connect. It's this thing called life is pretty fantastic, you know. It's every day my goal is my feet hit the ground. It's a great day.
So you got in touch with your friends and you said, "I'm on my way." Sort of.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And so, what was your first stop? Who did you? Because that was like.
Well, the first stop I flew to Tucson, and I picked familiar friends, my dear friend Phyllis and her brother and family, and but when I got to Yuma, I just said, oh my, what are you doing? And then I would get back in the plane and I would feel comfortable, and I think that's the interesting thing that I hope I've gotten across in the book, is I having the aircraft for so long. I had a 2-9er Lima since 1994, and then I modified her and upgraded her, etc. You develop such a kind of a relationship or synchronicity with the machine that that's one of the reasons why I also went, because I felt so comfortable. Yeah, well, I, you know, this is a place I feel very much at home. We call it being in the left seat. Another great book, if you ever want to read some great aviation books, by the way, Patsy, is by the famed aviation writer Robert J. Serling. That's Rod Serling's brother. And he, one of his best books is The Left Seat. And it's just a place of solace for me. And so that's one of the reasons why I decided to get into 29 Lima. Well, but when I got to Yuma, I said, oh my, what am I doing? Until I got back up in the air and said, well, of course, this is why you're doing this.
Wow. So you get to your friends, and do they think you're crazy for trying this? Or are they worried? They're like, are you really going to go all the way across the country?
Well, my friend Bruce, who I stayed with, I just mentioned, he and I had a tearful goodbye because he was very concerned. Everybody's worried, oh, you're going to crash, you're going to do this, you're going to, you know. And as a pilot, you always take that into consideration. It's a measured risk. It's not, it's a little more, it's quite, how could I say, more dangerous than driving a car. You know, when you drive a car, you kind of blank out and wow, I just drove 50 miles, where was I? But in a plane, you know, and especially in my plane, I have no autopilot. So it was constant flying and monitoring. And as I describe in quite detail, and that's what I was trying to do, I was trying to share the flying of what it's really like in a little plane. What do pilots really do? I think we all kind of wonder, you know. That along with the experiences of my friends and America was really what I was trying to get across in the book.
Well, you do, and I love, of course, how you write about flying and about being in the airplane, because my husband and I, we had a part ownership in a Cessna in England when we lived in England.
Oh, wow. I was just going to ask you what kind of planes you flew in.
And we flew out of White Waltham, which was an old RAF grass field, airfield.
Uh-huh.
And it is where
uh-huh.
Prince Philip learned to fly. So it was a lovely, it was RAF. People don't realize a lot of the RAF fields were grass. And it was just a lovely place to fly. And we had so much fun. And as I said, we had a part ownership in the Cessna. We flew almost every week, if the weather was good. And it was really a magnificent plane to fly, you know, when you're flying over like England and Scotland and Ireland and Northern Europe, it's a wonderful plane to fly.
You have a magic carpet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to take a commercial break, but I want you to hold on. And when we come back, we're going to start and go across country with you, and you're going to tell us some of your exciting adventures, okay? So I have a few commercials.
Can't wait, Patsy.
So hold on.
Thank you.
Don't hang up. We'll be back. We're going to play. Let's play. Let's go ahead and play that book buzz for Devon, and then we'll play the commercials, and then we'll be right back with Captain Bob and his exciting story about being a vagabond pilot and going across country and back.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Do you want to have a playtime adventure? Why not have it with chicken? Or should I say, con pollo? Meet Pollo, a friendly chicken who wants to play all day. Pollo is the character from the book Con Pollo, a bilingual playtime adventure. The book was written by host of The Tonight Show Jimmy Fallon alongside Jennifer Lopez. The book was illustrated by Andrea Campos. A New York Times bestseller, this was Jennifer Lopez's first children's book and is dedicated to Jimmy Fallon's high school Spanish teachers. Con Pollo, a bilingual playtime adventure, serves as an introduction to basic Spanish vocabulary to young readers as you decide what fun to have with your new friend, Pollo. The idea of the book came from Jimmy Fallon and Jennifer Lopez wanting to partner up and do something together. After various ideas, they settled on writing a children's book together. During the pandemic, people were getting chickens as pets, which sparked the idea for a book with chickens. And of course, the design of Pollo came from the illustrator Andrea Campos, who couldn't believe she was offered to illustrate the book. When Andrea was on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy gifted her a stuffed Pollo plush. If you ever get your own plush of Pollo, maybe you could continue to listen to Joy on Paper, con Pollo. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest. And this is so exciting for me because he is a pilot, Captain Bob Young, the author of Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal. Okay, hi, Captain Bob. Let's continue with this adventure story of yours.
All right, Patsy, let's.
Wow. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into planning a trip like this. I mean, you have so many landings to make, so many takeoffs to take. So this is quite a it's not something that's easy to plan. You have to really know what you're doing and where you're going.
Absolutely. This is part of the discipline of being a pilot is treating it with the respect the discipline requires, because when you don't, as my instructor would say when I was rushing around to my pre-flight, if you rush, you die. So take your time, you know. So everything was required some that kind of diligence. And flight planning, of course. I was going to new locations, different air routes, different environments. So I had to learn about each of the destinations and the arrival procedures, et cetera, et cetera.
And dealing with a lot of different air traffic controllers.
Well, you know, that was one of the most wonderful things that I experienced. And I should have realized this, but the air traffic control system this country has is just, for all the readers who are not familiar with flying or out there, it is just terrific. These are just an amazing bunch of professionals who operate and run a system that is really just, I'm always stupefied by how smooth and professional it is. And what happened to me is, having flown in California and the Southwest pretty much my whole many years of flying, now I'm going across the country, and that common voice in my headset was the most comforting, connective, reassuring thing. I'm not exactly sure what it was, whether it was the common language we all use at every place. It's the same. The procedures are the same. But whatever it was, and then when you got, of course, into New Jersey and New York and they started being sassy, well, that was even more fun. But it was just a great experience.
So when you would arrive in an airport, would you tell them what you were doing?
you don't share too many things unless, you know, you make a real bad mistake. Like when I think when I was finally arriving in Danbury, which was my final East Coast destination, because my friend boss had a hangar, I could park the plane there for a while. I couldn't pick out the airport. In the East, it was much more difficult to pick out airports because it's so heavily and densely forested, and I couldn't pick it out. I think I saw a little sliver out there. So the controller says, you know, advise when you have the airport in sight, because then they would transfer their frequency over to the tower for you. And I couldn't see it. So I was getting close. I was within 7 miles, and I still couldn't see it. And you're supposed to really report to the tower when you get about 10 miles out. And I confessed to the New York controller, I think I have the airport in sight. And he says, and being the ex-New Yorker, I can kind of imitate. He says, "You think?" You know, in that real New York accent. And that's when I confessed. I said, "Well, I'm from Los Angeles. It's the first time here." And so he laughed and he said, "Okay, then, you know, 12 o'clock on your nose, 7 miles, contact Danbury Tower." But anyway, that was the one time of true confession over the airwaves.
Well, we had a few times when we went to Scotland. We flew a lot to Scotland. It was our favorite destination. We lived just outside of London. And going up to Scotland, you know, in jumps, we'd stop along the way sometimes to see friends. But our ultimate destination would be Scotland, mostly because we had friends who owned where they smoked salmon, you know, commercial salmon. And so we could eat all the smoked salmon we wanted. So we'd fly up there just to eat smoked salmon. But some of those controllers up there in Scotland, they do have an accent.
Oh boy, I was going to say, could you even understand them?
Well, they're pretty good. They try to speak.
They try to speak English. Right?
Yeah, the King's English. But they've got that. They've got it in there. So we've had a few fun experiences, and of course, they always loved when they, after a while, most of the small airports knew us, and when they knew my husband was flying in, because he was He always wore cowboy clothes in Europe. Now, he wasn't a cowboy, and he was from Israel, but he wore cowboy clothes in Europe, and so he stood out, and they loved it. But with you, when you got to different places, and so you're, I mean, this really, to have friends who are excited to see you and to take part, really, in this adventure of yours.
Well, that was really the overwhelming for me because, as I shared, I was pretty beat up and I didn't know what to do. And I got in my plane and I obviously needed a lot of love and help myself regain my footing and build up my self again. And I was just so nourished and sustained by my friends. It was just an outpouring for me and for them, and you know, eternally grateful, who we travel with. So it was just terrific.
Now, of course, one of the things that as you were flying across the country, you were in different environments. Of course, good time of the year. It wasn't, you didn't hit bad weather too often, but I think you did occasionally hit some bad weather.
I did. It was a new flying experience for me. Having flown, as I said, in the Southwest, we are very spoiled out here as pilots. The weather is so benign. I mean, the sky is always blue in L.A., when we get rain, it's like it's a big event these days as the weather climate change happens. But I even though I have an instrument rating, I didn't do very much flying in inclement weather, and you really don't do very much flying in bad weather in a small plane. My biggest concern was, as you mentioned, the weather was going to be different in the summertime, convective activity. And I was on my toes all that. And this is a little plane, and I had to weave myself through many clouds. And I had, and when I got into Dallas, for instance, I was I didn't want to use my instrument license and my rating because I was a little bit rusty, and I was trying just not to put any pressure on myself to get anywhere. Coming back, this was another interesting thing that happened. The tenor of the trip changed. It was, when I was going, it was just to go and accomplish crossing the country. Coming back, I had to get home for medical appointments and things. I had my mojo back, so now I wanted to get back and ride, get on the horse, and I was dealing with a very difficult thing called get-home-itis, and it almost killed me in my experience with the weather in Colorado.
So you hit a
thunderstorm? As I share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, weather. Now, of course, we flew, as I said, in Europe, and in England, we did sometimes hit some weather. The weather could change very fast in England, and we had a few hairy experiences, but it was always fun.
Was your husband instrument rated?
Oh, well, he was in the Israeli Air Force. Yes, he was.
Oh, yeah. I guess he was.
Yeah. So he was. And he also was with the aircraft company, and he flew, prototype airplanes. So he was, something really special like that. But still,
you didn't hesitate about going flying with him.
No, I didn't. And we had so much fun. We did a couple with friends and larger planes, four-seater planes. We did some flying over Germany, flying the same routes that we flew actually with an RAF pilot, and he took us over Germany to his exact route that he took in World War II. So we had some wonderful, wonderful times flying over there. But, you know, it's special for people who have never been in a small airplane. I think this story, as I said, because you write so well, you do give a sense of what it was like, what it is like to fly in a small plane. It's a very special feeling to be up there. And as you said, I love when you say flying through the clouds. People would always say to me, "Well, what would happen when you flew through a cloud?" Oh, it was fun.
Yes. I remember when I first got my instrument rating, how scared I was of going into the clouds, and you know, and like anything, you learn and you get a little more comfortable with it. So it was great. But I think you asked me before, you were saying like about you know, what did I see, and the other thing I wanted to share with us is, and now you're bringing it to my mind, is sitting in that left seat. And looking out at the topography, the country, it was more impactful to me than when I did it by car when I was a young law student. And I basically remember there was an awful lot of corn in the Midwest, but I never had the perspective I had from the air and seeing how the country grew and followed the rivers and the huge expanse of our land. I wish everybody could see this, because you'd start to think a little different, you know, than what we hear. And I totally experienced an America totally different. I think I talk about this, you know, from the air, and when meeting all the wonderful people, there was none of this that I would turn on the TV and see, you know. It was just so, not disconcerting, but so in juxtaposition kind of my experience. You know, maybe it was just the sense of accomplishment that had me exhilarated. I'm not sure, but I think there's so much to see, and I wish everybody could see what I saw. I'm trying to post some videos now on my author page on Amazon, to kind of share more about it. And anyway, sorry to ramble.
No, it's good. I think people would enjoy seeing your videos. And as you say, when you're looking out of that plane window, and you have this special feeling knowing that you're up there. And my husband used to love when there'd be like clouds, he'd zip through them for me, because I love flying through the clouds. So but it looks like you know, this was so good for you. You really came out of this a stronger person.
Absolutely. And it has changed me. It truly has. I have for the first time in my existence, I don't count my happiness based upon possessions or position or whatever we seem to strive for and do. And again, I share that perhaps it's because of the perspective that aging brings. And, you know, they say also it brings a little wisdom, but, you know, many who know me would say, well, but no, seriously, it the sense of accomplishment made me realize, you know, you can do anything you want, and you just got to trust the universe. It's all going to work out. And so it has shifted my perspective about my personal happiness and life. And no matter how tough it gets, you know, it's going to be all right. I think I tell the adage, I don't know if you remember it from your quick read before you got me on the air, Patsy, but I tell the adage my father tells me about. He would always say, just keep, you know, when things are bad, you know, and rough, just keep getting to tomorrow, the judge could die. And so finally, he would always say that. I said, well, Dad, what are you talking about, the judge could die? He said, well, when I was a young lawyer, I had this case, and I kept getting beat up by the judge. And he was an older judge, and no matter what I did, he was against. And I just kept continuing, adjourning, trying to get to tomorrow and see maybe something different would happen. And sure enough, one day I got a call in the office, the judge died. And so I the case was assigned to a new judge who I happened to go to law school with, and lo and behold, I won the case. So my son, just keep getting to tomorrow. So that's kind of my an adage that I've adopted. And
you have to keep
to all of us out there, you know, just keep getting to tomorrow. It's all going to work out. It does.
It does. It is strange, but yes, I think one of the wonderful things about this book, and I hope people will get it because there is a lot of wisdom in this book. There is a lot of thought, you know, of your thought process about losing everything and yet gaining so much. And that's why I tell people that, you know, it's never too late. You could do this at 71. Now, a lot of people aren't going to be able to fly, but they can still write a book and find a lot of joy in doing the research about the book. That, say, you have some family member who was, you know, famous, and you want to go and do a book about that person and do the research and do the traveling, meeting people, talking to people. All of that expands your horizons, makes you think, and not dwell on whatever loss you have, whether it's you know, a loved one that you've lost, or money that you've lost, your job that you've lost. There's something that you can do out there, something that will give you what you now have, this absolute positivity, which is so important.
Well, I it's very true. We all beat ourselves up, and we're like I said, you know, I'm always reminded of that saying from The Alien when Jodie Foster meets him in Contact. And you are such an interesting species, but you're so cruel to one another. And I just felt so much love from so many people and good in so many things that, you know, when you come from that place and you do it, you can be the pilot wherever you want to go. You don't need a plane. You know, and just keep getting to tomorrow.
Well,
keep having adventures.
Well,
it's going to lead you to the place you're supposed to be. At least that's my humble theory now. Getting me by.
Well, it's getting you by, and I think it's keeping you going, and I think there's more to come. Once you discover, the nice thing about discovering that you're a good writer is that you don't want to stop. And I think there's another book in you.
You're absolutely right there. Yeah.
I don't know if you've started the next book, but I'm sure there's another book in you. And meanwhile, you can have fun promoting this book. I think it will be this is a wonderful book to promote, lots of opportunities. And it's called Vagabond Pilot, A Voyage of Discovery and Renewal by Captain Bob Young. You know, we have a Yiddish saying, beshert. It's meant to be.
Well, yes.
And it's meant to be that you would be on my program today and that I could keep you for the whole hour, because it wouldn't have been enough time to speak to you for just a half an hour. I really needed this extra time with you because
I think
you're fascinating.
I really thank you so much, Patsy, for allowing me and having me for that extra hour. I'm thrilled to be here, and you're my first radio interview, so I'm really very grateful for and honored to share my story with your readers, and hope soon to be readers, and I hope they can find inspiration in the story, because it really for me has helped me immensely.
Well, I think you're inspiring.
When I share it, people get it.
Now, do you have a website you want people to go to?
Not yet. I'm working on that. Now I'm getting the publicist and all this stuff, so it soon will be. But on Amazon, there's a little blurb about the author where I'm posting my videos, and we'll have that website up soon.
As soon as you have the website, you let me know, and I will tell people here on my radio program about it, and I will also post it on my website. I will post this interview on my website, and I will help promote your book because I think you are an inspiration, and I am so happy. You have in your voice a wonderful, wonderful joy, and I'm so happy that you found some joy in life, and now that you're going to spread it around and make other people happy and that they can believe that they can do anything if they want.
Thank you, Patsy. I appreciate your the love and support from you and your listeners. And yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes. So thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. It was great talking to you. And you're going to be back for when you get the next book, okay?
You got it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
All right. Oh, that's nice. That was nice. A pilot. Oh, my goodness. I can tell you, when we used to land on that grass runway, it was so sweet. I mean, that's all the only way you can describe it. You'd land on a grass runway. It's so different for people who haven't experienced it. You just, and then you're just, you know, taxiing to the, you know, taxiing, actually, we would be taxiing over to the nearest gin and tonic. And we had a wonderful, wonderful clubhouse there where all the pilots would meet. And of course, that was in England. And there were a lot of, still when in those days, there were still a lot of the RAF pilots alive. And certainly we got to meet a lot, and they loved it. And even occasionally we'd meet an American pilot who had flown out of White Waltham in England, because it was let's put it this way, all of the airfields were very busy in England during World War II, but it was a wonderful experience. And I do hope that you will get this book, because it's not just about a pilot. It's really about a voyage of discovery, a voyage where he's, you know, when you are, as he said, he had the house on the hill, and he had, you know, a beautiful life, and he lost it. And overnight, this can happen. And you think everything's over, but it's not. It's not. And it's up to you to just grab on and come out with an idea. Look, he's come out with a great book. I love this book. And it's, as I said, it's very, very well written. So, anyway, again, back to my NaNoWriMo people. Keep the emails coming in. I am so proud of you. I love it. It's been a wonderful, wonderful year, you know, to have you all taking part in NaNoWriMo. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book or to, well, maybe if you hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And I know Carol J. Perry is out there writing and writing and writing. Her new book, High Spirit, is available, and it has a Christmas theme, and it is a wonderful, wonderful book set right here in our area here in Florida, and it's called High Spirits by Carol J. Perry. Get it today. It will be wonderful to read over the Thanksgiving weekend and say something nice to somebody. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. It's been a lovely day. Whenever I talk to a pilot, I am a happy person because, well, I should have been a general. I would have been a general in the Air Force. Ooh, that would have been really cool. Although, I sort of liked the Army. Anyway, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.